Ratings.com is one of the most successful product review sites of all time. They have over 4 million monthly organic visits. And considering most of their content is reviews and roundups of tech products and gadgets, that's pretty damn impressive. And they do all of this despite only having a DR75 domain. Okay, that's still pretty high, but you gotta remember, they're competing against sites like PC Mag, Tech Radar, New York Times The Wirecutter, and CNET, all DR90 plus sites. So how exactly did they pull this off? Well, today I'm excited to be joined by Pauline Dathiel, head of digital marketing at Ratings.com, and a 7-year veteran of the company. We're going to be going behind the scenes to see what SEO looks like at one of the world's most loved review sites. And I gotta be honest with you, it was nothing like I expected. So stay tuned, because I know all SEOs are going to learn a thing or two here.
Welcome to the Authority Hacker Podcast. And now your hosts, Gail Breton and Mark Webster.
So welcome to the Authority Hacker Podcast, Pauline. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, really excited to learn a little bit more about what goes on behind the scenes at what is now one of the biggest review websites, I believe, in the world. I was doing some research for this episode, and it's hard to find a keyword for a consumer electronics product where Ratings does not rank either number one or number two. You're just all over the internet now. I believe you got, according to Ahrefs, at least, you got about 4.5 million visits. Can you tell us then, what is the secret behind your success?
It's hard to say there's a secret if we have anything particular going on. I think why we are so successful is because we do everything with our users in mind. So even in terms of SEO strategies that we implement, we're not trying to optimize for search engines. We're really trying to optimize for users and bringing the value for them. So I think we do think about things differently than other websites do.
You have this incredible rating system, this metrics for all sorts of different values and criteria that you assess. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got started with that and how that's kind of evolved over the years, please?
Yes. So Ratings.com was founded in 2011 by Cedric, so the president of the company, and he wanted to help consumers with their buying decision. It started with TVs. I guess he wasn't happy with the recommendation and reviews he found online. So what he wanted to do is eventually put all the projects we review under the same test bench. So we have a test methodology for each project category, and we put all the projects under the same test bench. And you can actually go on our website and compare the products yourself. So I think that's what at the core of a strategy is having a systematic way of reviewing products. So we've started with TVs and then headphones, and now we have 15 product categories on the website.
It sounds like a really difficult thing to pull off. In the beginning, when you were a small business, how were you able to buy all the TVs and run all these long tests? I mean, I've seen you do some tests that last sometimes into the years. How did you pull that off in the beginning?
To be honest, I have no idea how Cedric did it when he started. He started small. I mean, in the sense that we had the TV product categories for years and years before we started adding new product categories. And that's the same now. Yes, we are more aggressive with the number of project categories we launch, but compared to other project review websites, we are not as aggressive, because whereas some websites can launch a new project category in a matter of just a few weeks, for us, it takes like months of research, and we need to buy all the project ourselves. So like you said, it is costly, and then testing them, reviewing, writing all the content. So it is very costly for us. So we are careful about which product category we launch, because it is a tough decision.
And is that decision to launch a new category driven by SEO? I mean, do you observe that there's traffic and potential revenue to be made there? Or is it more driven by what you can and cannot test in-house?
No. So It's not a keyword opportunity or even a monetization opportunity. We want to cover everything. We really believe that we can bring value by viewing all kinds of products and services. So it all starts with us, where can we bring value to consumers right now? So of course, we do market research that includes understanding the popularity and audience for specific projects or product categories. But the fundamental question we ask ourselves is, how can we bring value by reviewing this product category? Like, what can we add that isn't there on the internet yet? So yes, we're going to look at a few metrics, even SEO-wise. I'm going to see the type of articles we can write after launch, but it's not an SEO decision. It's not my team who makes the decision. It's really with the expertise and the resources that we have, where we can see we can add value right now compared to the competition.
And can you give us a sense of the size of the team and the kind of environment that you have set up to run all these tests? I know you got a big office in, is it Montreal you're based in?
Yes. So we are based in Montreal. We have a big office. I can't really say how big it is, but what is cool about our office is that it is set up as a lab. So our inventory is spread out. Every product is displayed with its accessories. And all the employees can access the products to retest, to verify some results, or simply if they want to try it out for themselves. So having all of these products is a big advantage. For example, we can retest products after major firmware updates. And in terms of the teams, we do have like specialized roles. So we have the engineers that do the test methodology, create how we're going to test the projects. Then we have the tech testers who test all the products. And then we have the writers who do all the content.
And do the writers at the end, do they have any input into the testing methodology, or are they kind of given that and then they have to write up the article based on the results? How do those teams interact?
So there is collaboration, but we keep that separate. I mean, I'm not really involved in that side of the company, so I don't know the details, but we do want the engineers to have the say on how it's going to be done based on their expertise. And then the testers are going to test and the writers are going to write. So we want to keep that separate. But of course, there's always collaboration involved and feedback. And that's how we work in general.
And when your writers or your writing team are given the data and the test results, what process do you then go to bring that into a finished published article?
I mean, on the editorial aspect, I don't know. It's not my area of expertise. I know they get the test results. They're able to try the products for themselves. It's highly encouraged. But at the end of the day, with our systematic approach to testing, what we want the writers to do is not to write about the products based on their personal feelings. We want them to write based on the data that we have to be as objective as possible. So that's really our goal, and that's why we have this approach in general.
And you really cover each category, each type of product very well. You know, you've got your individual reviews, and then you've got your... for example, I was looking at a mouse, a travel mouse. I actually bought one based on the recommendation from ratings earlier this year. And it's really, really cool. You've got the individual product review, and then you might have like a roundup review or several roundup reviews where a product will feature in. Are you reusing the same content across these different pages, or how much do you care about the kind of uniqueness or duplicate content issues there?
That's interesting. I think we don't really think too much about duplicated contents in general. For us, it's always about what makes sense for users to have in terms of information. So at some time, in some aspect of the website, we can have duplicate section of content, but we think that it bring value to users. If it's beneficial to users, we're not going to get penalized for that. So for us, it's more in terms of the type of content that we write. So, you know, we have the reviews and then we write the best of articles based on those reviews. But yeah, on the details of what we use, where, it's not something that we really look at.
And I see you've got over 15,000 index pages on your site. Knowing the types of products you're reviewing, they're mostly electronic gadgets and things like that, which change, I imagine, pretty regularly. It must be a pretty comprehensive task to have to keep all that regularly updated.
Yes, it is. So it involves a lot of maintenance, also prioritizing how we work. We spend a lot of time writing new reviews, but also updating older ones. And since we are constantly publishing new reviews, we need to make sure that the best of articles accurately reflect the best product we tested. So it takes time. It's a lot of maintenance. We also want to make sure we cover all the topics users are looking for. So in terms of prioritization, it really depends on the type of content, how it is popular with our users. For example, if it's a TV that was reviewed 5 years ago, it's not going to be sold anymore. So we're not going to update this type of content. Whereas for very popular reviews or articles that really show some interest from our users, then we're going to maintain them way more.
And can you tell us a little bit about your site structure and why you've chosen to organize the site in the way you have?
Yes. So first of all, we have a custom site. So it's not we're not using a CMS. I'm not sure how the site structure was decided. It was before I started. But the URL structure hasn't changed a lot over the years. It always has been structured as a tree, as far as I'm aware of. So we have product categories at the top, then subcategories for reviews, best of articles, tools. And the thought process is really we want to make sure that it's easy for users to find all the information they're looking for. And since we're focused on the buying decision aspect, it means highlighting popular reviews, buying guides, the tools. So we're not looking for consumers to stay on our website as long as possible, to look at a lot of pages. We want to make it really easy for them to find what they're looking for. And it can be as little or as much content they need to be sure of their decision. But our goal is really having that information easy to find.
Sure. And you have over 36,000 links, according to Ahrefs. You're mentioned 64 times on Wikipedia, plus you have links from just about every newspaper and tech publication in the world. What is your link building strategy? I mean, how do you get so many links in such a short space of time?
Well, we don't have a link building strategy, which can be surprising. And there are probably some opportunities that we're missing without having one in place. But we think that if we succeed in providing useful content, people are going to share it. So instead of spending time building strategies to acquire links, it's more productive for us to spend time improving our tests and the quality of articles, because we see a direct impact of that. If consumers are happy with what we deliver, they're going to share articles, whether it's on Reddit or social media. And if they don't, well, we need to listen to their feedback and improve. So we're not trying to convince people to share content, but whether we really want to reach and not fully exceed their expectations, so that happens organically.
And is that the same for, I see you have a number of pages, essentially tools that you've built. There's one which is like a size to distance relationship for how big of a TV, mm-hmm. I guess you should purchase. That page has over 1,000 links. Was that designed just to help the consumer, or were you thinking, hey, this type of thing will get some links as well?
No, we were actually very surprised by the popularity of this article. It was really designed years and years ago just to help consumers who wasn't sure the right TV size to get, and the amount not only of links but of traffic and people talking about it and sharing it was surprising. So we're maintaining the article, but it wasn't done for links. It's always how can we help users, and that's why I say that with that mindset is mine, we do see the results, and it allows us not to think too much about how to acquire links in general.
Did you know that over 50% of you listening are not currently subscribed to our podcast? So if you go and do that right now on your favorite podcasting app, that's going to help us to grow this show so we can attract better guests, build a bigger audience, and in turn, reinvest more money into every episode. We've got a ton of exciting episodes coming up that you won't want to miss. So make sure you go and click that subscribe button on whichever podcasting app you're currently using so you don't miss another episode. Are there any other sites or businesses that you look to and you kind of draw inspiration? You see cool things that they're doing from an SEO or marketing perspective? Or are you just really just focused on making great content and staying in your sort of review bubble?
The latter. Honestly, we don't really look at the competition in general, just because the way we work about just being focused on the users is what's working for us in every way. So we don't want to look at the competition, and yeah, it can be useful at time, but I mean, and especially at the beginning where I was more micro-optimizing everything, it makes sense. But for us now, it's really taking a step back and where can we bring value to users? Like I say over and over again, it's really improving the quality for users and making a great job. And that's work. When we work that way, it brings good results. So that's our strategy all the way.
And is there a specific process that an article will go through before publishing? Do you, you know, add in keywords, or do you have an internal linking strategy or anything like that to try and optimize SEO?
We mostly work with guidelines that we have in general. So how to use keywords and how to write the H1. But even in terms of internal linking, yes, we do it, but it's not done by the marketing team. It's not done by me or my team. Instead, we let the writers, the editorial team, do it themselves because they know best how to redirect users to articles that could be interesting, that could help them with their buying decisions. So they have general guidelines, but we're not trying to optimize every single part of the article before it's being published.
And do you pay much attention to anything Google says regarding SEO? I know from time to time they do release guidance, and you know they had the product reviews update a year or so ago, and they released some updated guidance on what a good review is. Do you look at this and kind of adjust things, or again, are you just focused on doing what you think the users want?
Yeah, that's a good question. So yes, of course, we're aware of their guidelines when they update their algorithm, but we never want to react quickly after the changes. First, you know, it takes time for the search results to be final in the terms of how it works. So you don't want to be like too reactive in that sense. But also for us, ultimately, we want to believe that we are aligned with what the search engines and what Google is trying to do, which is to have a better experience for user. And we do share the concern that they seem to have, which is, especially with product review website, consumers might have difficulty in terms of the trust. Like, how can we trust this website and another one to make the buying decision, especially when they're affiliate links? So we think we share the same concern, but we don't want to necessarily apply all of the guideline, but instead think again, okay, if we take that concern, we take that issue, what do we think we should do to help the users? And we work toward that goal.
And are you worried at all about the upcoming, like, Google SGE or any AI implications for search and how that might affect traffic for, you know, big sites such as yours?
No, to be honest, it's not really at the top of our mind. We don't use AI. We don't plan to use AI. Is it going to affect search results? Probably it's going to be more interactive. It's going to change a few things. But ultimately, how consumers find our content, we're not really worried about that. If we need to adjust, we will. But we don't really focus on that for now.
And have you noticed any impact of, you know, featured snippets or Google Shopping results kind of pushing the organic results down a bit? And has that ever impacted any of your results?
We've seen volatility, but I can't say that we were impacted negatively or positively by it. Let's just say that we do see that there are changes in how they are trying to display search results. And I think they're trying a lot of different things. Does it always make sense to us? No, but ultimately, again, I think it's going to align.
And can you give us an idea of what a day in the life of your role would look like?
Oh, that's a good question. I started 7 years ago. I was the editor and SEO specialist. And over the years, I built a marketing team. So I think, you know, for example, at the beginning, I really had an hands-on approach of content. And a lot have changed since I started. So now I'm not doing like day-to-day SEO, for example. It's mostly defining our SEO efforts on not a case-by-case type, but on the overall situation. What can we do to better support the editorial team to improve the quality, but also to find different of content that could be valuable to users? So that's a big part of my role. I'm also in charge of the deals on the website. So that is especially busy during like Black Friday or Prime Day. We have the newsletters, but also we're trying to optimize different key metrics that are important for the company. So a lot of different projects, very interesting, very varies day to day.
And can you share some insights into how you've built up your community over the years? I see that seems to be a very important part of not only providing kind of feedback, but also input into the way future tests are kind of evolved and decided.
Yes, so the community is definitely a big reason. We are very conscious that our users are the reason we're able to do what we do. So first, we take the time to try and answer almost every single user question that comes in. And since our goal is to ensure that our reviews accurately reflect the same experience as a user would have at home, we put a lot of work on understanding the community sentiment around products or product categories. So we really value the community feedback on our work. With their help, we've been improving tests. We added new tests, and we're really grateful to have such an awesome community. So from our perspective, if we can have a good understanding of the things that are important to our community, then this can help us improve the work we do and improve the quality of our tests and reviews. And that means we want to involve the community as much as possible. So we have the forums, we have the comment sections, we have the review pipeline. So it's a great way to involve the community directly, because we can ask them to vote for the products they would like us to review. And it allows us to give a feedback, but also to create a place for them to speak and share and contribute. So the community is a big aspect of our work.
And I see you've also launched Ratings Insider. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and how that's impacted the business?
Yes, so the Insider program is one of the ways we make money as a company. So it's a paid membership. You can choose monthly or yearly. And that gives consumers access to all the test results, extra features, tools, personalized advice from our team. But it's also a way for people to support our consumer-focused mission. I mean, for years, we've been asked you know, how can I support your company? How can I make a donation? So we've decided to launch the Insider Program for that reason, and actually give benefits to the consumers that support us.
Interesting. And you mentioned a little while ago that you have your own custom CMS. Is there anything else you can tell us about your tech stack at all? I mean, how does it actually work from a data storage perspective? Are your writers able to kind of pull in different bits of data from tests, or is that done separately on like Google Docs, or is it all done in one place? How does it work?
I mean, on the technical aspect of thing, it's really out of my area. I don't think I can say too much, but everything is done internally so that we don't have Google Docs. We save our text on our employee platform. We even have a lot of tools, even for SEO, a lot of tools are created who have been created by our team of devs. They are all amazing. So for the keyword planning, the keyword research, I mostly do it with our tools and not with external tools. We do use SEMrush, but I mean, most of the work is done with the tools we have that have been built by the devs.
Wow, that's really cool. Is there anything you can share about what those tools would do or how they work? I mean, don't feel free to safeguard your industry secrets, but it's just really interesting to hear that you don't use these commercial SEO tools so much.
Well, in terms of SEO, it's you know, we have access to the volume and the ranking and the traffic that we get, and that's how we track the performance of our articles. And you know, we have dashboards that we use with all the metrics that each team needs. So it's very customized to everyone's needs, and it really makes our work easier.
Link building is a game of execution. The more organized you are, the better your results. And if you slip up just once, it can ruin a whole campaign. That's where today's sponsor, Buzzstream, comes in. Buzzstream is the outreach tool of choice for companies like Forbes, Capterra, Siege Media, and of course ourselves here at Authority Hacker. You can use Buzzstream for any kind of outreach, from traditional link building all the way through to digital PR. Anytime you find an interesting prospect or website, just click the button in the Chrome extension to add it to your Buzzstream project. Buzzstream then automatically finds their contact information, social profiles, and anything else that you need to help reach out to that prospect. It works like a CRM, so you can build individual templates that can be customized for every single prospect that you're reaching out to. This allows you to send much more personalized messages to every recipient, ensuring that you get a far higher response rate. The tool also has some cool features like automated follow-ups and A/B testing to ensure you get maximum responses. So if you're someone that wants to build high quality links at scale with a team, then check out buzzstream.com/link building. All right, thanks to Buzzstream for sponsoring this episode, and let's get back to the show. I see that you've also started a YouTube channel. Is video going to be an important part of your future strategy?
So YouTube videos, it has been a lot of years that we've started, and it's not really a big part of our SEO strategy, at least for now. For us, we see YouTube as a big platform for people to understand products and to make buying decisions. So, of course, we want to utilize that as much as possible. And we want to have a bigger presence on YouTube. We are actually in the process of growing a video team. So if you're interested, you can come apply for a job. Some people prefer videos over articles. So that's a great way to reach most consumers. And videos also help in other ways, such as increasing trust, because you can actually see in our videos that we have facilities that are designed around rigorously testing and comparing products, that we actually have all of the products we talk about, and that makes us confident in what we're saying. So we believe that if people can better understand how we work and see that for themselves, they will see why they should trust us and come back to us and hopefully recommend us to others. So for the future, I don't know the exact plan, but a lot more videos are planned for the year.
And when it comes to the rest of your traffic, then I presume the majority of it comes from Google. Are there any kind of diversification plans, or are you really just focused on organic search traffic?
We are really focused on organic search traffic. We might be open to explore other areas in the future, but for us right now, that makes the most sense in the terms of how to reach users. So that's the main focus for the company.
Yeah. Can you tell us how you use A/B testing in any of your SEO efforts?
We have done more like A/B testings, so comparing one version and making a slight change to another version with CTAs or like tests like that in the past. But for now, we haven't done that many tests. I don't think it's our plan for the short term. But I mean, there's always a way to optimize your website to make it better for the users in terms of the user experience and how we display information. So at some point, we might do more, but it has been limited in the past.
It really strikes me, interviewing you, talking to you today, that ratings just has a singular focus on making great reviews that help people, and all the other things just seem to slot in place kind of automatically, because, well, not quite, but much more easily because you have that focus. I see a lot of other businesses, they kind of make SEO their focus, and mm-hmm. then the quality of the content and the dedication to consumer kind of comes as a secondary or a tertiary thing. Do you see that as well when you look at other sites or other businesses? Do you think that most people or other businesses should switch focus and not really focus on SEO quite so much in that way?
I do think so. But I also think that it is particular in terms of how we operate in the company. I think it's really a culture thing that was created and nurtured by the president of the company. Because even speaking from my experience, when I started, I had this marketing background. So I didn't really have the mindset that the president was doing. I was thinking on how we can optimize and how can we increase traffic. And I was always suggesting new strategies. And he always asked me, but what's the value for users in doing that? And if there's no value in users, if it doesn't benefit them, then we're not going to implement that. So it really shifted my mindset. And, so I've been here for 7 years now. It's a long time. But I think more and more this culture is very clear in everything that we do. And I do think that it's something that should inspire our companies to do as well.
That's really interesting. How does that culture then manifest itself in like the day-to-day of the company? Do you have sort of company values which set this in stone, or are team leaders and management kind of explaining it on a regular basis, or like how is that? How do new employees kind of get swept up in that?
Yeah, we have like presentations for new employees of what the company values are, and the pillar, the trust, and it's even reminded on our dashboard so that we don't lose our focus. But it's also always on top of our mind because even myself, I still ask the question, if I want to implement something, I do need to ask myself, what is the value for users in doing that? So I think it's always on top of the management positions in general and all the employees, is we're doing what we do because we want to help users with their buying decision. So it's not SEO is secondary to all of that. And I think it's why our SEO is so strong, is because it's secondary to all of our decisions.
If you were to start again from zero today in 2024, what would you do and what would you do differently?
In this position, you mean?
I mean, ratings in general. I guess the question is, if you hadn't had all this experience with the site, you're starting today from like a fresh domain with the same business, what would you do differently?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I mean, we learn a lot over the years, for sure. I think we spend some time, especially for myself as a new CEO role, trying to optimize for almost everything. And the biggest impact on the result that we had is when we took a step back and think, what are we trying to achieve and how can we achieve that and bringing the value to the users. So for myself in SEO, even like targeting new keyword or creating articles, it really took time to have the mindset that we have now in really identifying the concerns and the needs of specific users when they are looking for that keywords and understanding how to bring the value to them by the personalization aspect. So I think I learned and grew a lot. But in terms of the company in general, I think we've learned so much anyway from our mistake that I don't think we will do things differently.
Is there anything that stands out in your mind as a kind of really big mistake that the company's made that you've learned from over the years?
Yeah, that's a good question too. I mean, I think maybe it's always for us a tricky decision where we're trying to launch new product categories in terms of the pace we want to go, because we do want to grow, but we want to maintain the same quality for all of our product categories. So it's just a matter of finding the right pace. And maybe, in the past, we had like big period of growth and then we took a step back and make sure that the quality was really high for everything before we launch again. So having a good pace in mind is something that we learn as we grow, but hopefully if we've found it now.
And I imagine that's quite sort of complex, having all these physical products, buying them, getting hold of test models, storage, that kind of thing. How big of a task is this for your company to manage?
I mean, there are some logistics involved. So we have a dedicated employee to take care of the logistics. We are constantly adjusting racks and spaces based on how many products we want to keep in stock and for how long. And like you said, since we buy all the products ourselves and we keep them for a while, it takes a lot of space, and then we want to sell them locally through our website. So people can email us and we set up an appointment to pick up the products. But the fact that we keep all of those products for so long, it also allows us to do things that other websites can't. So for example, the biggest test we've ever done is the longevity test. So we've decided to run 100 CDs for a 2-year accelerated longevity test to see how long they last. And every 2 months, we take measurements to see how they age over time, and we post updates. But it's really something that is cool to do that takes a lot of space, but is worthwhile for us. And people are happy about this kind of test and see what we do. We post videos about it, so it's more concrete for users, our mission and our goal.
Now, I'm based over in the UK, and I know you're based in the US, in Canada, sorry.
Yeah.
So my question is, are there any logistical challenges in being outside the US in terms of acquiring new products early or when they're first released?
I think the biggest challenge is not necessarily being in Canada, but the fact that we buy the products ourselves, because of our product review website, since the review needs are usually sent by the manufacturers, it's before it's launched. So we sometimes have delay in testing the product or reviewing the products compared to the competition. And in terms of the logistic aspect of buying products, we do have to get quite a few products shipped from the US.
So just to be clear, you don't accept any review or test products. You buy 100% of the products yourself.
Yes.
Wow.
It might change at some point, in the sense that if we want to review a product early. We might change that. I don't know. It's not my decision. But yeah, we buy 100% of the products we review.
And was that done to from like a impartiality perspective? So you can say to consumers, hey, like we buy 100% of things ourselves. So there's no way we could be biased.
There is that. But there's also the fact that we don't want any cherry-picked units because we do see degrees of variance between products, especially things like TVs. There are TVs that perform better on the test than others. So we want to make sure that we have the same experience a normal customer would buying at a store or online, and we want to replicate that experience with our company.
Nice. And will you ever buy ratings.com with an A?
I don't think so. I think we looked briefly at it, like not really seriously, and it's so expensive. We don't really see the point of buying the site to have a redirect. So not in our plan, no.
You probably got a lot of people who search, you know, RTINGS specifically for you now anyway, because you become so popular. So it's probably counterproductive in that sense.
Well, even if they misspelled, usually it's, you know, like the name of a project review, and then they will put waiting and we will appear first anyway. So like you said, it's no real point to buying the domain.
Great. So is there anything that I haven't asked you today that I should have asked you today?
I think one aspect that is interesting also that it might be different from a lot of other websites, and I've listened to like a lot of episodes of your podcast, is the fact that the way we operate, we keep monetization, the monetization aspect very separate at the company. So even that is not something we look at when we update our content or prioritize our content, because we don't have access to that information. Like, we don't know which projects bring the most money. We don't know which articles bring the most money. It's entirely secret for the editorial team, for the SEO team. So I think that's also helped with our impartiality. And I think sometimes consumer might be worried about, oh, do we recommend that product or that brand because they pay us or we gain more money? But that's not the case at all.
Wow. So your company's essentially been built with these kind of barriers in place to ensure impartiality like that. That's quite impressive, actually.
Yeah, thank you.
Fantastic. So thanks, Pauline, so much for taking the time to come on today. I really appreciate it. I learned a lot. Really interesting to see how Ratings has been built and grown over the years. Okay, now I'm going to do a quick post analysis of the interview and really get into some of the takeaways from it. Now, my main takeaway from all of this was that if you want to do great SEO, don't focus too much on SEO. I know it sounds super counterintuitive, and you've probably heard it before. I know I have, but it's always comes across as such a vague and inconsistent piece of advice. I'm thinking, well, what does that mean? How do I follow those principles? And what does that actually look like? Well, I think there are a few really interesting takeaways that shows what that philosophy can look like in practice. Ratings do a few things differently here. They've really built a culture around putting the user first, and their entire focus of all of their teams is on doing that. This is reflected in employee training, the values within the company. And Pauline even said she doesn't do anything related to SEO or marketing without asking herself first, will this benefit the user? And they're really putting the user ahead of their own success. And in doing that, they're actually making themselves more successful because that's what users want. It was super interesting to see that they've built a system of checks and balances within their own business where their SEO and content team can't see what's converting and can't see the financial results. This means that they don't have to worry about being influenced by commission rates and all these types of things. They just focus on making great content and the best possible quality reviews. And their users love them for this. And you can't really argue with the results of all this. This concept of resisting the urge to make a quick buck at the expense of your users, it's a really tempting thing for most businesses, especially in the affiliate space, with those juicy commissions at stake, but all of the top companies, the best businesses, not just in SEO, but globally, they put the user first and they make an excellent product or an excellent service that people really love. I mean, their exact match keyword, ratings, has an estimated traffic volume of 39,000 per month. They're really building a loyal following here, and that's something that's also reflected in the community aspect of what they do. They have a passionate community that helps them to even develop their product review frameworks and their rating systems, not to mention all the comments and content on the forums that that creates as well. And this is something that we saw in the previous podcast where we looked at sites that did quite well after the helpful content update last year. A lot of them tended to have big communities that they interacted with regularly and really became a core part of the business. And another interesting takeaway was their caution at not going into a new product category and just starting to create content there. They're very cautious and not doing that until they were ready. They wanted to ensure that their product reviews, their testing framework were really thought through and would essentially be the best in the world. Plus, they also wanted to make sure that they could maintain their existing content before taking on the burden and the ongoing burden of not only creating new content, but having to maintain that too. That's something I see a lot of SEOs make mistakes on, where they get really good at creating new content, going into new categories, but then they don't have such a robust system for maintaining and updating content. Some of it gets out of date. And in the case of product reviews, that can really impact some roundup reviews and, you know, best of type keywords. You saw Pauline say that she was focused on making sure that the roundup reviews they had were always true. So you go to ratings, you can be sure that the best left-handed mouse that they're reviewing is actually that at the time which you read the content. And the secondary benefit of doing this is that they don't really have a link acquisition strategy, yet they acquire loads and loads of links. And okay, there are a few things that maybe they can steer things in the right direction. You know, some of those tools that they created, really interesting and have obviously acquired a lot of links. But just by having the best content in the world about their topic, they've acquired tens of thousands of amazing links from some of the best publications in the world. So for all the effort some of us sometimes put on link building and, you know, optimizing things and all this, if we maybe put that same amount of effort on just making really, really good best-in-class content, you know, it's another way of looking at things, sure. And of course, both approaches can work. But this is really living proof that this methodology can bring extreme success as well. So it's at least something to consider as part of your overall content, SEO, and link building strategy. If you enjoyed this interview, please give the show a nice 5-star rating on your favorite podcasting app. It really does help us to get discovered more. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. If you can't wait until then, though, do head over to our new Authority Hacker News YouTube channel, where we share all the latest up-to-date news and insights from around the industry. Thanks, and we'll see you again next time.